The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on May 14, 2006. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good to see you this beautiful day, this Mother's Day. I'd like to say something that may be appropriate for the day, and that made me think of Dogen Zenji's teaching in the Tenzo Kyokan, his instructions to the cook. Dogen, I should say, is a very important teacher in our school. He's a 13th century Japanese Zen monk and very influential, a very great teacher. In one of his teachings, the instructions to the cook, he speaks of parental mind, and I'd like to say a little bit about that today. In his instructions for the cook, we should understand that in a Zen monastery and in Zen training, the cook, the Tenzo, is a very important figure, very high station as a teacher. But our teaching isn't just in what we say and giving a talk like this now, or say in something that Dogen or other teachers have written down. It isn't just that alone. The teaching is in how we practice, how we live our life, how we conduct our life. Much of what the Tenzo does is in taking care of the kitchen and of feeding everyone. So it's a very important station, because this isn't just simply about cooking, about making dishes and providing the food and that sort of thing. It's about, as everything is in our practice, is about attending to your life and waking up to your life and the quality and the conduct of your life. Are we there? Are we present with this? And in someone who's running such a central thing as providing food for those who might come and train in this way, a very central, very important position. So Dogen had a lot to say about this. And near the end of his essay on the Tenzo Kyokan, he gets into this teaching of parental mind. He's speaking of, really, in terms of maturing. The Tenzo, of course, would have to be very mature in their practice. But he's talking about just maturity in our life, in our conduct. It's about growing up, about really becoming a grown-up. And as a grown-up, we need to attend to the children and to each other. A lot of responsibility here. And it does require that we look at our own life and at our own conduct. So often we might want to instruct children, to lay out the rules for them, you know, tell them what they can and can't do, and this sort of thing. Easily it becomes something kind of crusty and rigid, and of course it might create kind of a defiant spirit in a child, or in anyone for that matter, and probably not so effective. What is far more effective, and something that is probably more difficult and subtle for us to carry out, though, is to realize our own conduct, because this is what the child is observing. This is what they see. This is what we are teaching. This is what we are instructing. Not so much what we're saying, but what we do and how we live. This has far more of an impact on the child. And so it is very, very important that we really attend to our life. And Dogen spoke of parental mind. This is the mind of the attitude, the approach that you take toward your child. Well, what is that exactly? And he's talking about cultivating this for life, cultivating it in every circumstance. In other words, you would treat every encounter that you meet with the heart and compassion and wisdom and understanding that you would want to have in dealing with your own child. And of course, we would, most of us, I think, would take this very seriously. And that is what Dogen is speaking of here. Well, he speaks of this mind, parental mind, in relation to two other minds. There's actually three minds here. It's called magnanimous mind, parental mind, and joyful mind. And what informs us as a parent, or that gives us this parental mind, is this magnanimous mind, this big mind, this mind that isn't just bound up in little me, in our self, our ego, or even our own personal identity, even our family identity, or identity with my child. No, this is a mind that opens up to the entire world. Because as he said, parental mind is to have that mind, the mind of a parent, but we engage this mind in every encounter that we meet, at least to the extent that we can bring ourselves here and be present in this moment and realize that. We should understand that this is our situation in the world, that whoever we meet, whatever we meet, is our life. Yes, this is our child, this is our mom or dad, this is our family, our brother, our sister that we meet. And we meet this in every circumstance. So this is to have magnanimous mind, a big mind, a mind that isn't caught up in self and in trying to get everything to go my way. This leads to a lot of conflict, a lot of difficulty. It isn't really taking care of the world and taking care of the whole or the reality in which we actually live. Because the fact is, the truth is, that we live our life not alone and separate from others, but we live our life with others, with all beings. We really live our life as all beings. Our true life is actually inseparable from the life of the world. To realize this, to come to this understanding, this is called magnanimous mind, or big mind. Gradually, what we learn through cultivating this mind is how to live egolessly, to live without being wrapped up, totally wrapped up in concerns for self, but opening ourselves to the life of the world. And in this way, we can take whatever natural feelings we might have toward caring for our own child, loving our own child, we can begin to carry this mind into our encounters in the world and as a whole. This is called the parental mind. So parental mind is actually just kind of naturally comes out of this magnanimous mind. Once we open up our heart and mind to the world, we aren't caught up in the separations of how I'm different from you or how I think different from you. These things become less important to us. What is more important to us is the actual field and fabric of the life that we're living. Is it peaceful and harmonious, or is it full of contention and hatred and difficulty and misunderstanding and confusion? What are we cultivating here? Magnanimous mind informs us to just look at this whole picture and to realize how we are carrying on within this. And as we open up more and more to this, we cultivate this parental mind. And with this parental mind, then, this is the wonderful part of it. The parental mind, in turn, also opens up to what is called joyful mind. Because far from what we might commonly think, actually, we probably don't think about it so much when we're caught up in self, but to the extent that we are caught up in self, we are sowing a lot of hatred and anger and difficulty and sorrow in our life. We make it hard to live our life, and always occupied with the getting, and what can I get out of this, and you know, how can I take advantage of this situation, or I don't want somebody to put something over on me, or any of these kinds of things, any kind of contention that is arising in our life. This is sorrowful. It is difficult. It makes life difficult, and it leaves us confused. It doesn't leave us open to the actual life that we're living, because you can never get apart from the other. So there's no point in trying to intensify that barrier that is there only because of our misunderstanding of the other. Better to live and to see if you can live without that, or at least to minimize that and to realize the commonality that we share with all beings here. Out of this, then, we find a joyful mind, a happy mind. So in this kind of a backwards way, to the extent that we occupy ourselves with ourself, our little self, we're actually kind of unhappy. We keep ourselves perpetually miserable and grasping and wanting and fearing and struggling. To the extent that we forget our little self and turn our attention to our true self, our true nature. This is our Buddha nature, as I was referring to earlier. Opening up to what we truly are, what we really are, is to open ourselves up to the world and to embrace all life as our own, as our own child, and to take care of that. And we look at the human world today, how frightening it is now, how confused it is. People walling themselves off into separate identities, saying that we have the claim to the truth here, and others saying, no, you don't, we have it over here. And well, look at this. Just look at what this is. It is people fracturing the world, fracturing themselves, separating themselves, and walling themselves off from the other. It is misery through and through. You cannot take care of the world, of the other, as though it were your own child. That is misery, and it is not even to understand the actual life that we live. The actual life we live is of one whole piece here. We're all together on this planet. We are one in some very fundamental way that we cannot omit or overlook. To the extent that we open up to that, that we awaken to that, we have joyful mind. So out of this wholesome view of the world, this magnanimous mind, this big mind that is not to be walled off and caught up in your own self, we cultivate this parental mind. And with this parental mind, we have a joyful mind as well. Of course, now I think many of us, those of us who are parents, I'm sure we all know, even if we aren't parents, we've had parents. We might think of all the grief we've caused our parents. Being a parent isn't always fun and games. It isn't always a bed of roses. A lot of difficulty there. But to the extent that we can learn to, first of all, just love our children, to love each other, to take care of each other, even though difficulties might arise from time to time, we are actually cultivating a field and a place in which we can heal the misunderstandings and the difficulties and the sorrows. And we can learn forgiveness. We can learn to embrace each other and to understand that I know you didn't mean to hurt me. It was out of some kind of confusion. I know you didn't mean to hurt yourself either. And I didn't mean to be controlling you. We can come out of this. We can come out of the narrowness and the brittleness of mind and the intolerance and open up into this larger space once again. So even though quite naturally differences and confusion and conflicts and things will arise, we are now cultivating a field, a place in which we can once again find wholeness and happiness. This place too, by the way, is called a Dharma field. That's why I named this place Dharma field. Dharma just simply means reality, the true place in which we live. It's not a place that we can have ideas about. You know, whatever ideas we have, those are already fractured. Those are things that we're grasping. Our ego is getting bound up with our ideas. Beyond that, before we get hold of anything, there is this reality, this huge world, this place, this Dharma in which we all live. Just like all the different plants and animals that live in a field. You know, a cornfield, rice field, the original idea was of a rice paddy, given the culture and the time and place where this teaching came from. But it could be any kind of field. But it's the field of human life. And in this field, we need to learn to get along. We need to realize that our life is actually the life of this whole field. It's kind of a cliche now, but you know, that line, that it takes a village to raise a child, is that same kind of an understanding. That's parental mind, once again. That is opening with this magnanimous mind, opening our mind to the whole field and fabric of human life. We find this parental mind and this joyful mind as well. So much of what we study here and learn here, it takes us a long time to understand this. It's really about ourself in the sense of where we turn our attention to ourself. Normally we forget. We're not paying attention to that. where normally we do preoccupy ourselves with ourself, here we learn to let that go. So in other words, rather than concerning ourselves with all of those out there and that out there, and I want to get that and I don't want that, and we're always turning our attention to out there, to the other, occupied with it in one way or another. What we learn here, what we cultivate here, but it takes us a while even to learn that this is what this cultivation is. It is the reverse of this. And where we're normally not paying any attention to how we're living, to how we're thinking, to how we're interacting with others, to the kind of life that we're creating for ourselves and for others, or our children, or our parents, here we turn our attention to that. How am I conducting my life? How am I living? Another thing that is vital to all of this is that we need to be free of judgment and condemnation, because very easily we can find things that are, we've gone awry, we've gone astray, gotten off the mark. And so very easy then for us to condemn ourselves. First, it was easy for us to condemn others for all the different things that we didn't like about them or whatever. But now as we turn our attention to ourselves, we might think that what we need to do is to somehow view ourselves as being kind of corrupt or faulty in some way. Well, no doubt we are, but we don't need to condemn ourselves. That isn't to be healthy. That doesn't really help the situation at all. All we need to do is to be honest about it, to wake up to it. That's why we begin these ceremonies with this formless admission, which says, all the karma ever created by me, since of old, through greed, anger, and self-delusion, I now make full open admission of it. So we admit that. And all that means is a karma, by the way, it just means willed action. We have ideas about this term karma in our culture now today. It's kind of misunderstood. But as the Buddha spoke of karma, the term he meant was willed action. So those things that I was doing willfully, out of greed, anger, ignorance, have I done these kinds of things? Yes, I have, and I admit that. So all we need to do is to admit that, to realize that that's the case. We can't make excuses for ourselves. But now let's go on. Let's engage the world. Let's vow to take up a more wholesome way of life and practice. So that's where the focus then is, that in this area where we tend not to look at ourself. In Buddhism, that's where we look. In those areas where we tend to ignore others, not tend to them, well, that's where we do look. So we just kind of flip that one around. And that's what this practice is. It's called wholesome practice. Wholesome mind, or magnanimous mind.
Could you say more about joyful mind?
Joyful mind, yeah.
There's also a term I heard somewhere, child's mind.
Child's mind is, or beginner's mind. That's another thing too. Yeah, we're so often we have everything in reverse. Until we start to look at our lives carefully, we start to realize, boy, that's another thing. We just sort of have it backwards. As human beings, we often just take everything by the wrong handle. So we might look at something like, say, beginner's mind, child's mind, and then we think, whoa, well, yeah, well, I want to graduate past that. I want to get past that quickly. I don't want to be a beginner, a mere innocent, ignorant little child. But as we understand it in our teaching here, no, you want to retain this beginner's mind, this childlike mind. Look at a child, how open they are, how eager they are to learn. They don't presume that they know anything. They just want to know. They want to learn. And they're eager for that. But as we get older, gradually, we start filing things away. Oh, I know what that is. We got that labeled. That's pegged. That's, you know. And we start kind of shutting down. And we start boxing ourselves in, framing everything up. And it starts to become just kind of rigid, you know. We get, you know, we're just bogged down in our thinking, our opinions, our beliefs, our prejudices. And all the while, we're not open to life, which is very fluid and open and ever-changing. So we retain that aspect. We would make that effort to come back to that, to open ourselves up, to realize what it is that you're hanging on to with some kind of rigidity and brittleness here. What's the foundation of that? Where did that come from? Why must that be there in your mind? Is that really linked to the truth? Probably not, because the truth is something far more liquid than that. And once we open ourselves up to this, we begin to realize that this is the case. That, and this is life. Life is dynamic. Life itself is this vibrant, ever-changing reality that we're in. That's what it is to be alive, is to express and to know and to feel and to realize this fluid and dynamic reality. But how is our mind, you know? As we become more of a know-it-all, an expert, you know, we got it all filed away. And it doesn't match that reality that we're actually living. So it's important. It just doesn't mean that we throw away what we've learned in life. No. But we should always realize that in each situation that arises, there's something new coming up, to the extent that we don't approach things with maybe a little bit of humility, thinking that, oh, I don't know. I don't know this situation. So then we can be more like that of a child. On the other hand, sometimes people get confused and then they think that the whole object of becoming some wise sage is to actually have a child's mind. That's not the case. We're not children. We have learned. A child is really free and innocent, doesn't know much yet, but they're learning fast. And we move through this area where everything starts getting, and most of us kind of freeze out there. Everything gets crusty. But to fully mature, like the Tenzo and the Tenzo Kyo, the cook, to fully mature in this practice, we move through that brittleness and that area where everything is kind of framed up and boxed out, into an area of true wisdom and knowledge. But it's free and fluid, just as this childlike mind is. But it's not a child's mind, because the child yet has a lot of things to learn. We arrive at this mature mind. We know these traps and snares and ways that we create injury and difficulty for ourselves. And so there's quite a difference there. But this freeness and openness of mind can be cultivated anywhere along the path. Did I answer there, Joel? So, yeah. Okay. Anything else?
It seems to be a pivotal point in morality where one would pay attention to oneself, where we know when we pay attention to others and pay attention to others in the way we would normally pay attention to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the parental mind again, you see. Because in a way, that's what a parent will do. The child is sort of an extension of the parent, so the parent will have that mind directed toward another, the child, but as though self. So that's kind of what we're talking about with this parental mind, but we don't just stop there. We can extend this till finally we embrace everyone in this way. Think how beautiful the world would be if we all just had this mind. This truly magnanimous mind. And then you were asking about the joyfulness too, but I think we can just see, you know, the joyfulness that would come from that. And again, it doesn't mean that there won't be conflict and difficulty and sorrows. But in cultivating a field like this, it's just so much easier to take care of all of this. Of course, then we might think, well, yeah, but we're not going to get the whole world to be like this, you know. Well, no, probably not. So that's why at the end of our service here, we talked about the muddy water. May we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. This purity is referring to the purity. Purify your own mind. This means to watch your own mind. We don't go out there and try to purify the world, straighten out the world. The world is muddy water, and it will remain so. It's not our job to straighten all that out. Besides, we can so easily get caught up in our ideas and notions and beliefs and opinions about things that we're going to try to push that out onto others. It's so easy to get caught in that way. Far better for us to just watch your own mind. But to the extent that we do that, to the extent that we can learn to wake up to the kind of corruption within our own mind and take care of that and let that go, in this way, then we actually can help the world and maybe do something about that muddy water out there without really trying to do it, without operating out of some agenda. So it's very effective in the world as well. But we don't initially turn our attention to that. Our attention toward the world and toward others is take care of them as best you can. Heal the wounds, the misunderstandings. Do what you can. Was there something else there, Bruce?
No, it just seems to be very important because you've mentioned it before when you taught the precepts and that to kind of switch one's orientation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how we also understand morality. Morality cannot come from the outside. It can't come from somebody ordering you, you know, directing you. You know, you do this, don't do that. That doesn't cultivate a true heart of understanding. It doesn't cultivate one who's truly a moral agent, as we are. We are responsible for our own life. And so the morality has to come out of your understanding and out of your realization. You are the one who's responsible for your life. And if all you're doing is following orders, that's not really living a moral life. That's just following orders. What if the orders are wrong? You say, well, the orders I've gotten are right. But yeah, well, somebody who believes a different way might not think so. You don't think that about what they're doing, you see. We set up these kinds of frames. And that's human conflict again. We stand back with this magnanimous mind. We see what that is. We don't want to get entangled in that. You have to find it in your own heart. And so we wake up to this, not to kill, not to lie, not to steal. We realize this. We realize the pain and the sorrow that gets sown with acting in these ways. When you realize that, then we can let that go. We can stop that. But if we're told, don't do this, that doesn't work very well. It'll just make us angry, resentful, you know, rebellious. So natural morality can come out of your own heart if we just learn to cultivate it and to look for that. So that comes also with this magnanimous mind and parental mind and joyful mind, an understanding of morality, true morality, and how it can function naturally and not through some artificial contrivance. So yes, this is very central. It is extremely important and not well understood. But again, that's something you can only cultivate in yourself. You can encourage others to notice this, but in the end, they have to cultivate it in themselves. I know we all want to get out there and just straighten everything out and straighten everybody else out, but that doesn't work. That's how we sow human pain and sorrow. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.